Hey guys, welcome back. This is Josh JCL Felto for The Writer's Lens. And if you are tuning in for the first time, this is the fourth episode in the series that I've been doing on my path to getting published. And this is going to be a pretty tough episode for me because this deals with a very specific issue that I think I've really run away from for most of my life. And it has to do with the topic of rejection. And if you caught my last episode, I talked about the concept of working really hard at your craft. And one of the things I really hit home was trying to stay out of financial debt, trying to stay out of financial instability. There are no medals being awarded to people that live in a dumpster for 4 to 5 years for the sake of their passion. It just, they're not happening. But today's episode is as difficult as last one was for me to talk about my own financial problems that I had trying to get my books off the ground. Today's is just as personal, and I think it's something that every writer, every creative person has to deal with in some regard, which is, as I said, rejection. And how do you deal with it? And what happens when it does happen, and you feel like you can't actually carry on after it has happened? So since this is The Writer's Lens, and it's through the scope and the lens of a writer, I'm going to be giving a lot of writing examples of my own journey in this episode and just kind of talking about rejection in general and how that affects us. So before I do any of that, I wanted to kick it off with probably the first time I felt real rejection, which goes all the way back into elementary school with a really probably ridiculous example of my first crush. So it was a girl named Kim, of which last names will not be shared or anything. But my best friend and I in elementary school, I think it was about first grade, perhaps. It was either first or second grade. It was when I think something began to stir in my brain about the opposite sex. And I was going, oh, I want to be around these girls, but I'm not so sure because everyone says they have cooties or they're telling me I have cooties or something. And I mean, if you've gone through those stages, you understand. But basically, my best friend Mike and I had a crush on the same girl in early elementary school. And I'll never forget, we were hanging out at his house one time, and she just happened to be over there. And you couldn't have scripted it any better. I mean, it was two young lads, this girl who was the object of their affection. And we go on this like hike in his backyard, which to me felt like we were hiking through Yosemite Park or something. But really, it was probably just about 5 to 10 feet of small brush, you know, or anything. But I had this wiffle ball bat with me, and I don't know why. I don't know if my plan was to like bop Mike in the head and you know, convince Kim to come back with me to his own house for some reason, leave the body, who knows. But she walked into like a what Pennsylvanians call a jagger bush, and she kind of skinned up her leg, and I took my bat and I crushed this thing, this brush that she had been stuck in. And Mike came over, though, as I'm holding it for her to get out, and he kind of helped her out and carried her back to his house. And I'll never forget when we got back there, she was kind of in pain and crying, but he took care of her while we both took care of her. And this is a true story. And what happened was she basically doted on him from that day forward and just kind of brushed me to the side as though I wasn't capable of maybe meeting her needs at 9 years old or whatever it was. So looking back, that was the first time I really felt like this was something that I wanted and I wasn't going to have any part of it going forward at all because the other party said, you're just not good enough. I think it's because I wasn't very tall. I think he was taller than me and that had something to do with it, but that's neither here nor there. But the whole concept of rejection was just totally mystifying. I mean, not that it's a traumatic experience, but we all need to have learning experiences. It's not a traumatic experience, just a learning experience, okay? As a child, when you know you find out that your crush is not interested in you, it's not traumatic. It's just, hey, this is time for a learning experience. And how was I going to respond going forward dealing with this whole concept of rejection? Well, obviously, growing older, we find ourselves getting rejected more and more often. But the thing that I found interesting as I've done a lot of research on rejection in general is how much of an effect it has on our psyches just in general. It can make you feel like a failure, which I'll get into in a little bit. And you can even start to define any further experience based upon a simple, you know, one single first rejection that you have. So it kind of goes back to the old adage of you can do a million things right, but you could do one thing wrong and it could ruin everything. It could just totally set you back despite everything that you did right leading up to that. And it can even cause physical pain. Now, this was probably the one thing I thought that was most interesting. And this was, I mean, you can find this out online if you want, but there were separate studies done at Purdue and at the University of California that found out in extreme cases that sometimes people who experienced rejection too much would actually get physical pain from it. This is pretty wild stuff. And then, and of course, the most extreme cases of all, people would lash out angrily, which I don't say this with any bit of lightheartedness. Several horrible stories we've had, especially in the U.S., like dealing with school shootings with kids who felt rejected, who felt like outcasts. Horrible things like that can happen from rejection. Now, I'm not going to go to that extreme in this podcast whatsoever, but just giving you kind of the framework of how much rejection can affect us and how much we want to avoid it. We don't want to get involved with situations that can feel like we're going to be rejected. As a writer, then, since this is the writer's lens, rejection is actually quite commonplace, and that was not something that I was perhaps prepared for going into getting published, because granted, when I was in high school, I was in college, I was a pretty good writer. I mean, I would share my stuff with people, and it wasn't just friends, family, but it was just anybody, and they'd be like, hey, this is pretty good, you know, have you ever considered doing this? So I already had a bit of a chip on my shoulder and a bit of an ego about it. But when I first started sending out letters, my manuscript for my first book, The Epiphanies Theories, Downright Good Thoughts book, I got my first dosage of real rejection. So as I found out, rejection happens quite a bit in the writing world. So for instance, agents will reject you, sending out your solicitation letters to try and convince a would-be agent, hey, you know, you should take my book and publish it. Rejection happens there. Your readers even will reject you. I can't think of how many times I've offered my book to just kind of, not I wouldn't say random strangers, but just other people and say, hey, would you be interested in reading this book? And most people do say yes, I would say, but there's always that one out of maybe 10 or 15 that say, no, I'm not too sure. And if you're a salesman and you're a person who's not used to selling yourself, that can be a major setback. Oh no, you don't want my stuff? You don't want to read my stuff? I mean, that can really set you back a bit. And that goes all the way to friends and family too, which is the next on my list. My youngest brother, Jeffrey, I know you're listening to this, read my book. I didn't give you an advanced copy for nothing. But I honestly, I've had a lot of really great feedback from the books that I've written up till now. But it's funny how even sometimes with family, you can't really rely on them to give you feedback right away. They can kind of reject and go, oh, you know, I'll get to it. I'll see him at Christmas in a year, and maybe I'll get around to reading his book. So, Jeffrey, I know that you're here, you're listening to this. I want you to read that book. And probably the one place that you don't expect rejection to come back is upon yourself. I mean, I can think of many numerous times sitting at my computer late at night, just thinking that this whole idea of writing a book, getting it published, and having people read it is just mortifying and paralyzing. I don't even want to go through with it. And it's not like I have those thoughts every night. I think if I did, I'd probably give up on writing altogether. But the reality is that you're going to face these situations of rejection. And in the writing world, it happens actually quite a bit. So I've discovered that throughout all of this, there's three kind of steps, or rather three ways that you end up responding to rejection in the writing world. And that's, you get used to it, you get over it, and then you get through it. So for instance, getting used to it is, like I said, rejection's everywhere. Understand that it's going to be a necessity for writing. I mean, very rarely is there ever a story that you hear about where somebody wrote one manuscript, the first draft was great, they sent it in and someone said, this is perfect, we're going to publish it for you and you'll sell a million copies. If that person is out there, I'd like them to contact me. My email is in the end of this podcast. You can find it there. I want to hear about it. But it's something that you just kind of have to get used to, and you start to navigate through that. Numerous book conferences that I've been to where I'm sitting at a table and I'm talking to people about my book, for instance, and just usually total strangers. you're not going to have every person walk up to you and say, wow, this is the greatest idea I've ever heard. You're going to have a lot of people going, well, that's interesting. Maybe I'll come back later. And that part of selling yourself is not something to get rooted in as part of your identity. Obviously, you're selling your book, and being a creative person, your book feels like you. You're putting yourself on the table. And that's something that I've obviously had to get used to when it comes to selling myself, especially, you know, person to person, because it's not like doing it over the phone when you're doing telemarketing. Not that I've done that, but having to do that is a little bit different than standing face to face with somebody and seeing in their eyes that, yeah, maybe I'm just not interested. But the next part of that is you just got to get over it, okay, which seems like really poor advice, but that's part of just not taking it too personally. I've noticed that a lot of people in the writing world are very good at not taking criticisms too personally. And I mean that as getting over the hump of, look, people are going to say some nasty things about your book. All right. You're going to have people that just don't agree with something that you did. I know that on my latest book, The Road to Mars, the ending, for instance, which I won't give away on this podcast, the ending was something that I knew I had pretty much already set up in my mind before I even finished the book. And I led everything into the ending. And I would say three out of the first four people that read it got back to me in the advanced copies that I'd given them. And they went, what was up with that ending? I'm not really sure if I agree with it. And I'm hearing this criticism going, well, should I change it? Should I not change it? Is it something that I should consider fixing? I wasn't really sure about it. And I just had to realize that, look, I can't take this too personally. I know this is the ending that I wanted for my book. And I can't just change it because a few people are saying ahead of time, look, I don't agree with it. And if anything, it's probably a good thing, because to have this kind of a response to your story is good, because ultimately, if they liked it, they got to the end, and they may not agree with the ending, but as long as the journey is good, that usually, to me, speaks more volumes. But not taking it personally, okay, especially in getting rejection letters. I know that for my first book, Epiphanies, Theories, and Downright Good Thoughts, I sent out probably 50, maybe 70 letters out to various agents to try and get some kickback. Somebody just to say, hey, we're interested in your idea. And so many of them got back to me and said, sounds interesting, but I'm not for it. Or perhaps this was one of my favorites. This is a really unique concept, really unique, but there's no way I can get behind it. That's pretty demoralizing. That can make you feel like I'm just spinning my wheels. I don't know what else, you know, what am I supposed to do about this? So getting past that, getting over it, is something that you have to do, and you have to not have too thin skin, especially today's market, in order to get your ideas out there. And lastly, of course, is getting through that. So once you've kind of gotten used to it, you're kind of getting over the fact that you're going to get rejected, now you got to get through it and get to the other side. And that truly is where I think the rubber meets the road for a lot of people that are trying to get their books published nowadays. Not being afraid to put yourself out there. Not being afraid to have someone say, look, I don't really think what you're doing is good, perhaps. Or perhaps saying, I'm not really crazy about your idea. That's fine. That's okay. You can keep refining it. It's not a bit. It's not the end of the world. I always go back to Jerry Jenkins again, like I had mentioned in my last couple podcasts, and how he said that most writers are just interested in being discovered. Again, I can't say that enough how much that resonates with me as a creative person. So many people are just interested in having their work get discovered. They're not really interested in hearing the bad news about what they do. They're not really interested in hearing, hey, you have a good product, but these are the things you have to do to make it great. They just want someone to pat them on the back and say, this is good. They don't want to have to deal with that rejection that says, look, you've got to put your nose to the grindstone on this and make some changes. Which is interesting, because when it comes to art, when it comes to writing, we sometimes think of our natural talent for it, our natural affinity for it, to be all that we're ever going to be able to be with it. So, for example, if I write a short story and it's praised, I might look at that short story and say, you know what, that's the best it's ever going to be. I could never write it better than that, because that's my expression. That's me on paper, or me in a Kindle, for instance. It's never going to get any better than that. But the reality is that perhaps it could. I mean, there's 100 different ways to write sentences, the same sentence, rather. And if you have this mentality of, look, I can take good criticism and be able to apply it to my work, whatever that may be, then I'm already in the good in dealing with these kinds of things going forward. There's a, and on that note, there's a really good principle that I wanted to make mention of in this particular podcast, which is called the Petreo principle. And I heard about this through StoryBrand by Donald Miller, who's a gentleman that I follow pretty regularly on his website and on his podcasts. And he is the CEO of StoryBrand. And what they do is they basically revamp companies and businesses and the story that they give to their potential customers. So presentation is everything to these guys, and telling a story and getting themselves out in front of, again, potential buyers. And he shared this really interesting information once on a blog that he did called The Petreo Principle, where there was an economist by the name of Vilfredo Petreo, who came up with this 80-20 principle. And what it basically is that when you're in the business of creating something, and you could be in the business of manufacturing or insurance or what have you, you're always going to have 20% of your base that disagrees with you or thinks that what you're doing is not any good. So, for instance, I could have 10 reviews, or we'll just make it easy, 100 reviews on my Road to Mars book. 80 of them could be 5 stars, and 20 of them could be 4 stars and below. All right? That would be really cool, actually, to have 80 out of 100 be 5 stars. But mostly, a lot of the times, what people do is they look at those 20 people that didn't agree with them, who didn't give them the 5 stars, and you just absorb that. And you begin to think, oh my gosh, man, maybe those 20 people really did disagree with me because they had good reasons. Or maybe I really am just not that good. Or I did deserve that 2 out of 5 stars for my book and it just wasn't good enough. We tend to latch on to those negative affirmations, which is, again, not good. And it's not true either. And Petreo, what he's saying is, forget about those 20, that 20% of whatever it is. You're writing for the 80% that loves your stuff. And if you continue to give back to them, think about it, you're doing much better at 80% than you are at 20. Why do you want to try to appease everybody? Now, granted, that's also another thing about human nature that's so interesting. We want to be liked by everybody. But when you're in the business of just anything about getting a creative message out there or your own story or, like I said, business endeavors, I always use business endeavors as good examples here too because this is about starting up something. You want to market yourself to that 80%. They're the ones that you want to ultimately write your story for, because they're the ones that again, are going to be looking forward to your next one and your next endeavor and whatever that may be. So write for them. When I heard this the first time, which was, oh man, this was a couple years ago, maybe now, this also really struck me big because it, again, in terms of changing mentalities and thinking of it in a certain way, the Petreo principle is so true. I mean, again, we want everyone to like us, but at the same time, we can't let the small minority of people that don't like us to dictate how we try and write our stories. We just can't do that. We have to write for the people that think we're great. And that way we're going to be able to take some of those criticisms that were negative and make something even better than before. And maybe eventually you will acquire those people in that 20% group that don't like your stuff as much. Who knows? So I myself had a really tough time in the beginning balancing this. I mean, what was it that was going to keep me from feeling like I had to appease everybody and keep me motivated and not be afraid of getting rejected by that small number of people that might reject my work? And the conclusion that I came to is something that I've talked about in some previous episodes, and it really came down to, what was it that was totally motivating my stories? Was it this concept of a handsome paycheck? Though that's a nice thing, don't get me wrong. But really what I found out that was motivating me the most to deal with rejection was having a story to tell. And most writers would agree that writing and telling a story begins with feeling like you have something to say. You have something worth telling. You have something worth having other people hear it. And if you really do believe that, you can face rejection much better than the next person. So, for example, going back to my first few books, the Epiphanies series books, the rejection that I felt when I was soliciting my book out was just crippling. I mean, I couldn't handle whenever someone would get back to me and say, yeah, nice idea, but no thanks. Or perhaps I get no answer, which, you know, apathy just makes you go, oh my gosh, it's that bad of an idea or whatever. But I constantly found myself skirting away from any kind of opposition as often as I could. And I didn't, in the end, I didn't want to be associated with the failure that I felt like the project was. You know, I wanted to jump away from it as quickly as I could. And I even remember sitting down with a friend of mine, Eric, if you're listening to this, and talking about how I was going to switch gears and I was going to move from satire and I was now going to start writing fiction. I was going to start writing science fiction. And I said, yeah, you know, one of the things I'm really throwing around there, and this was obviously my conversation with him several years ago, and I was just saying, yeah, I'm not real sure. I'm thinking about actually changing my pen name. You know, I don't want to go by JCL Felto and be associated with that. And he just kind of looked at me and he just said, you know, Josh, and maybe a little bit of backstory on Eric first is, Eric is a bit of a fellow entrepreneur and a good friend of mine, and he just kind of said, you know, I wouldn't downplay the reality that you can use it as a good story later and say, look, this is where I started and this is where I am now, and don't be afraid of that. And I just wanted to thank Eric, as dude, if you're listening to this, I appreciate the vote of confidence, because it definitely helped me turn things on its head and say, you know what, so what, that was then, this is now, and I'm not going to be afraid of it going forward. So that was what really helped motivate me to get moving, was the fact that now I really knew what my passion was. I knew that I wanted to write science fiction. I knew that I wanted to tell a good story that came from the deep bowels of my imagination, from years and years of suppressing it, perhaps, or maybe developing it when I was a teenager and through my college years and everything else. And that's essentially how it came about. And this whole story, of course, that I'm developing every day as I continue to write the Mars stories, and I'm still working on the second book to get it released this year, it's been so much better. I mean, it's been, obviously the reactions have been better. My reactions to everything have been better, and I feel more confident about it, and I'm okay owning it this time around. I'm not afraid of people telling me that 20% or so that say, yeah, we're not really sure if, you know, you did right by this, because I know there's that 80% that really wants me to keep going, and I've had that, and it's been great. It's been awesome, and to those of you who are listening who are part of that, I really thank you guys from the bottom of my heart. It's been such wind in my sails to keep me going and to keep doing this writing thing, so I appreciate it big time. So that's going to be it for rejection, because honestly, I can't keep talking about it. I don't want to get into it too much, and I know I'm running out of time here for this particular segment, but I did want to, again, say thanks to everybody who's been tuning in to The Writer's Lens. I've really enjoyed doing it, and I'm looking forward to the next episode a week from now. So until then, guys, again, if you want to check out some of my stuff, go to my website, you know the deal, jclfelto.com, and look forward to sharing with you next week another update on The Writer's Lens. Until then, peace out.